The Guardian.
The Guardian has partnered with audible.co.uk to offer listeners a free audiobook when you sign up for a one-month, no-commitment trial of the Audible service. Audible has over 50,000 audiobook titles available to download. Go to guardian.co.uk/audible for further details.
Mr. Deputy Speaker, no Chancellor can justify a tax rate that damages our economy and raises next to nothing. It is as simple as that. And thanks to the other new taxes on the rich I've announced today, we'll be getting five times more money each and every year from the wealthiest in our society.
The Chancellor spoke for an hour, but one of his phrases was missing. There was one thing he didn't say. Today marks the end of We're All In It Together.
Hello, this is Politics Weekly. I'm Tom Clark. The top rate of tax for the richest 1% has been cut in George Osborne's most controversial budget yet. Into this year's statement, he packed a corporation tax cut, a raid on pensions, and a £10 billion further to be slashed from welfare. There's bad news too, as usual, for smokers and motorists, although drinkers have been spared. Nick Clegg called it a Robin Hood budget, but are the only merry men tonight those in the top income tax bracket? Joining me for all of this, we have The Guardian's economic correspondent, Philip Inman, our economics leader writer, Aditya Chakraborty, and our political columnist, Polly Toynbee. A warm welcome to you all. First of all then, Philip, what do you think the single headline will be?
Well, no one's going to really get away from the top rate of tax being cut from 50p to 45p. That will obviously be the defining moment and explaining how this becomes Robin Hood when you've done that, and the other measures that they say that have garnered five times, which is what Dalian Alexander has been touring the TV stations telling everybody. It's five times as much as being taken from the rich by virtue of the new measures they've got. Although it's very hard to see how, even with the stamp duty on £2 million homes, you're actually going to get to that figure.
Polly, you've watched budgets for a while. Does this remind you of days gone by?
Certainly does. Feels like absolutely back to the 1980s. This is an in-your-face Tory budget. It's a real wallop to the bottom 25-30%, and a gift to the people, sort of people who donate to the Tory party. And it's so upfront as to be really quite breathtaking, very bold. It suggests we have a party here in the Tories, maybe in the coalition, that think they're set to win the next election. They feel very confident. Whether they're right or not, we shall see.
Well, whatever floats your yacht. Aditya, would you agree this is the first budget that George Osborne's given where it felt much more about politics and much less, therefore, about economics?
I think the positive history of George Osborne's budgets would go something like 2010 was kind of the year of the cuts, when the big news was just how many cuts we were going to have over what period. 2011 becomes the kind of the year of no growth, when first of all the British economy slows down and then the Eurozone crisis really picks up and people are wondering whether George Osborne's going to do a U-turn. For the first time ever in 2012, we get back to talking about measures, except this is against the backdrop of both cuts and the economic crisis, which hasn't gone away, despite what the Chancellor promised us back in 2010. And for the first time ever, in a fiscally neutral budget, because he's not really giving away that much overall, he's not borrowing that much more, he's not saving that much more, you get a real sense of his measures of where the government's priorities lie. Do they lie, as Philip was saying, with the 50p tax, or as Polly's saying, with, you know, their friends who are donating to the Tory party? And there was a classic moment, which I also think will at least be very get a strong showing on television over this week, which is when Ed Miliband turned to the coalition front bench and said, so how many of you will gain directly from this budget? And then just waited and said, we've got all day, raise your hands if you gained. And there was this uncomfortable silence.
Well, obviously everything's turning on that 50p tax in terms of how we're all reading it. So I spoke to an expert in the field earlier, Richard Murphy, who was a tax analyst in the past before he became a campaigner. And I asked him, did George Osborne provide a compelling case for cutting the new top tax rate?
No, George Osborne has not provided cover for that. I still believe that the amount that he's cut is about $3 billion a year. He claims the amount he's raising is only about $700 million a year. How does he claim that it raises so little money? Even he admitted that it was because of the avoidance from 2010-11 into 2009-10. And of course, that won't happen again. In other words, he's making up excuses to avoid or to allow him to cut this tax rate. Quite extraordinary. He is going to increase the allowances. There are people who are going to fall out of tax as a result. I don't dispute that. But the biggest benefit of this will go to those earning between about £45,000 and £100,000, and in particular to families where two people are in that bracket, and they exist, of course. And for those who are on the very lowest levels of income, who he says this is going to benefit, there is a double whammy to this change. They are going to see many of their benefits cut as a result because they'll pay less tax, and they'll also be seeing other benefits cut as a consequence. So this is not good news for the very poorest, who are supposedly the target of his largesse.
Already in this morning's papers, Polly, we've had this line about how this is actually very, very, very well disguised Robin Hoodery, and we've got graphs. I've got some in front of me here saying, oh, look, it turns out the poor are going to pay rather less than the rich, despite what we all think. Without getting into the detail of them, how do you think that will cut with the public? Do you think people will believe the fact that there's redistribution on the sly going on here?
No, I think it's going to be the Sheriff of Nottingham budget, and everybody's going to see that. In history, this will be remembered as a totemic budget for this government. I mean, for better or worse, they may get away with it or not, but people will remember the cutting of the 50p rate. And, you know, people don't absorb all that much of the details. There's no doubt at all that the bottom 25% will have really been hit hard. They've been hit very, very hard on the tax credits. And the people who gain, because they're being taken out of income tax, they're getting very little. They're getting £170 a year. Nice to have. But it's not nearly as much as lots of people are losing in their tax credits. And in the end, people really know. These are people who are now counting every penny when they go shopping. You know, we've had lots and lots of case histories of people, low earners, hard workers, struggling by. And I think they're going to find they're hit harder than they've gained. And those graphs that have been put out with the budget are pretty misleading.
Aditya, Polly doesn't believe the charts, but the Lib Dems are certainly very actively claiming they're raising five times more off rich people than that they're giving away through this 50p thing. I mean, do you think if they say it often enough, for a start, do you think it's true? And then for a second thing, do you think that people get lost in the fog of statistics and just think, oh, Labour's lying as well, and so the...
All I'll say about that is that every single budget and mini-budget we've got out of this coalition, they've always claimed it's been progressive. And then there's this annual, or sort of every 6 months, there's a jamboree the day after by the Institute of Fiscal Studies, in which they actually go through what the impact will be on rich and poor. And they always declare that it's regressive. So each time they've stood up and government said it's progressive, and each time the IFS, who is this country's acknowledged experts on fiscal policy, say it's regressive. So I don't believe that. And actually, I didn't hear very much from George Orwell, which would even make it stack up. The Lib Dems like to claim that they're doing more for the poor because it makes them feel better about the coalition they're part of, but I don't believe it. I think there is something else which is quite dangerous for
but
George Osborne.
Just so one, before we let that pass, because everyone's in danger of agreeing here, I mean, there are some real measures here, aren't there? Like, so stamp duty up on homes over £2 million, that will affect some rich people quite substantially.
Right,
and tax avoidance.
What you're doing there, what Chancellor's doing rather there, is he's taking away a guaranteed stream that he knows he's getting of money that he knows he's getting from people earning over £150,000, where he knows that he's taxing them at 50p in the pound. Fine. And what he says that he's replacing that with is he's going to tax them more every time they buy a house worth more than £2 million, right? So how many times do people go around buying houses worth £2 million? He also says that he's going to try and stamp down on loopholes and tax avoidance and all this sort of stuff, which actually I've been watching budgets for a fair amount too, and I can't remember a single budget in recent memory where a Chancellor hasn't stood up and said he's going to bring in a whole raft of anti-avoidance measures which are worth something like £1 billion. And each year they do this, and each year the tax avoidance industry in this country managed to find a way around it. But just to come back to something, George Osborne's done very well since 2010 in talking about the undeserving poor, these people who stay behind shutters and never do anything apart from claim benefits. With this thing on tax credits, I think he's made a dangerous leap into new territory of attacking the working poor. And that, I think, might end up being more dangerous for him than the coalition have sort of cottoned on to.
You're talking about cuts on tax credits coming in April, not something he's announced today.
It's the stuff that starts to bite from next month.
We've also got housing allowance, which was obviously housing benefit, So that's started to kick in from January. So if your review, if your housing benefit comes up from January, you'll get the cap. And also from next April, you'll start to have it only uprated in line with CPI rather than the RPI measure of inflation. And that's another effective cut. And these are big numbers that are reducing housing benefit year in, year out, for the next however long.
For listeners who don't know the detail of the benefit system, the big picture here is you cut 18 billion out of benefits, not for pensioners so much, but for working age people. And sure enough, the poor get poorer because the poor claim a lot of benefits for it. But the politics of this budget was very cleverly to distinguish, at least rhetorically, the deserving, the undeserving rich, and then at the other end, the deserving and undeserving poor.
Yeah, so, but our job is to pick through that politics, isn't it? And to see what the actual effect is. And the actual effect of raising the personal allowance is very limited.
Yeah, this is what I'm going to ask you.
Because the welfare benefits are clawed back. So your tax credits are on your gross income. Yeah, I don't want to get too technical here, but that obviously any gain you have from a less tax, you keep. But your welfare benefits are clawed back on your net income. So if you will get a rise in your net income when you get this tax benefit. So he said you get £170 gain a year after inflation. But most people won't see anything like that who are in the kind of band we're talking about. We're talking about the minimum wage upwards to the average wage. So that's 12,000 to 26,000. These people are going to have a lot of that clawed back. So it's a lie for him to say that that is a clear benefit for everybody on low incomes. It just isn't.
Polly, though, there is something here in the politics, isn't there? I mean, for a start, it sounds simple to say that you're going to increase the allowance rather than do something with tax credits. And for another thing, you've got people who Labour didn't do much for, low-paid people who don't have children, so haven't been getting tax credits but work hard and don't have much to show for it. This might benefit some of those.
I think it sounds good. People, after all, a lot of people really don't understand their pay slip anyway, and they're not quite sure why it fetches up as it does with the tax system, which is incredibly complicated. So to announce in public, anybody can earn 9,000 and soon it'll be 10,000 without paying any tax, sounds very good, much better than it actually works out in reality, because already quite a lot of those people are not paying much or very little. I think the real effect will happen over 10 years. It's this big switch, as Philip said, the big money is coming in, the switch from how you measure inflation, from the RPI to the CPI. And the IFS says that's where the megabucks comes in. And of course, people don't notice that. It's a frog in boiling water situation where people find their money's going less and less far, but they don't experience an actual cut on a bit of paper that tells them. But we will see many more people falling into poverty. We will see the gaps widen over the next 10 years as a direct result of this very important policy change, which is in perpetuity. So those people will fall behind year after year after year forever.
So, Aditya, lots of damning stuff, really, in terms of a traditional progressive test for a coalition that used to claim to be progressive. Let's just move for a second to business tax and anti-avoidance, something the Guardian's campaigned for. There's a new general anti-avoidance duty. We should be pleased about that, shouldn't we?
I am certainly in favour of a general anti-avoidance principle, which is, just for anyone who doesn't know what that means, and I hope there are people who've got lives out there who are listening to this, means that any company which is coming up with a new scheme to arranging its tax affairs has to present it to Revenue and Customs beforehand to get the sign-off from them that's fine for them to institute it. So the tax man or tax woman can catch out anyone who's trying to be devious with their tax affairs. If it lives up to that, which is what campaigns have been calling for, like your Richard Murphy, for a long time, then that will be a very good thing. But set against that, George Osborne talks a lot about, you know, helping enterprise, helping small businesses, all the rest of it. At the same time, the biggest single initiative he's taken on business tax is to cut corporation tax, which really helps big companies who, you know, like your the likes of HSBC. Although he says that he's clawing back some of that money from banks with a banker's levy, it really helps his big companies with big headquarters here. It doesn't necessarily help if you're a manufacturer or anything like that. I found it quite odd. Last year, Osborne talked a lot about the March of the Makers. His budget was devoted to manufacturing last year. This year, there was nothing I heard that was devoted for manufacturing at all.
What about the cut in just headline corporation tax, Philip? I mean, is that a big boost for industry?
What I think he's done is put business in a slightly difficult situation. And I think by that, I mean the business representative. So you've got the CBI, the Institute of Directors and all the rest. In that he has basically given them all they wanted. They now have a tax rate below which, when they fill in their own surveys, they say anything between 20 and 25% is what we would want. So here they're going to have 23% by 2014. So they've got that. The big companies have wanted to change the rules on how tax is applied to their foreign subsidiaries. It looks like they're going to get the cut that they want in that. So really, what is going to be their problem? You know, he's now talking about easing the planning rules on where they want to build and how they want to invest. So if they don't get things moving for him over the next couple of years, you know, what excuses are they running out of excuses of how they should get out, make business and employ people?
Problem but of course, we've got the prediction that growth is going to go up next year.
Quite sharply.
So they'll be able to say, aha, look, cutting taxes, it really works. Cutting taxes for the rich and cutting taxes for business is what drives growth. And they will claim all down the years of history, this shows the Keynesians are wrong, this shows we're right, and the battle will continue.
Can I just ask Polly about one other group that's maybe particularly hit today and is always important in politics, which is pensioners? There was some fiddling around the edges on pensioners' tax premiums.
Very interesting. No existing pensioner will lose. Well, they're going to get a freeze. But if you're a pensioner, you get a higher personal allowance up until you earn $25,000. So pensioners earning up till that will actually have that allowance taken away. That's extra allowance taken away from them. But they'll only be the new pensioners, so they may not know it ever existed. There'll be people retiring from 2013. The existing pensioners will just have it frozen. I think that may bring in quite a lot of money. But if, you know, the pensioners' organisations, and after all, people are coming up to retirement age, are very keenly aware of exactly what they can expect, I think there might be quite an explosion over this. They're very effective, the pensioner lobbies. And, you know, we've heard a lot from people who've been made to retire later, who found their pension plans are changing at the last moment. This is quite a big change at the last moment for people about to retire.
Phil, do you have anything on pensioners?
Well, I thought it was an interesting little study in Holland very recently, which found that the age 55 to 65-year-olds in Holland were getting deeply depressed. And the reason they were getting deeply depressed is a wave of depression spreading across Holland. And I suspect here too, which is the prospect of this much weaker, worse retirement than you'd pictured. So you'd pictured quite a nice retirement for yourself, and it's all ebbing away. Every part of it is kind of disappearing. And here are more chipping away by the government at this nice retirement you pictured for yourself.
That's right. I mean, because Aditya, it was new stuff about saving for a pension that was delayed. And in terms of pension ages, we've got used to the idea they're going to have to go up. But now he's saying they've got to go up forever.
Yeah, I think Phil really is on something there. And it's not just people who are heading into retirement. It's a whole raft of people, actually. I mean, you can make a similar kind of argument for young people in this country, in that a lot of the things that they thought they would inherit, or they might have thought they would inherit 10 years ago, they won't get now. You know, the certainty of a job to go into once they've done their degree, the ability to buy a house through a hefty mortgage, that's all gone away. So there are an awful lot of people who might have felt what they were once entitled to has been snatched away from them.
You can see how there are fairer reforms going on across Europe. So, for instance, in Spain, your retirement age is not flat, it's dependent on when you started work. So if you started work at 16 or 18, you get an earlier retirement age than if you stayed in at college and worked on.
Which is sense.
So you stagger it. So you don't just have a... Because obviously any retirement age that says it's flat rated at 70 penalises working class people who started work at 16 or 18. They've got to work another maybe 10 years longer than somebody in a white collar job. Well, why would they be punished to do that? Particularly as they're probably doing something with heavy lifting and might actually be knackered by the time they get to that age.
Polly, can we just have a final word on the Lib Dems? I mean, they've had difficulty, obviously, with the health bill, and you've been involved in jousting with Shirley Williams over that. But this budget, despite the claims of Robin Hoodery, where does it leave Nick Clegg vis-a-vis his party?
a lot of his party will be alarmed and upset. But on the other hand, what we did see at their spring conference was that they were actually fantastically obedient. There was a sort of a bit of a mumbled rebellion about health, but otherwise they were basically on side. I think they will feel that it's been made quite clear that the raising of the personal allowances has been a Lib Dem policy. The government have made the Tories have made it quite clear this is a Lib Dem policy, so they can boast about that. But in the end, this is going to be a budget that's remembered for the 50p and them rolling over again.
So that's the Lib Dems. Aditya, what about the Labour Party? How are they feeling tonight?
Well, first of all, let me say that I would obviously wish the Labour critique of the coalition's policies well. I do think there is a moment of danger approaching for Labour, though, and you can call it the divide between two parts of the Labour front bench. There's the Ed Ball side of things, which says that basically the cuts aren't going to work. And for the past 2 years, that's been a very, very powerful thing. Every time there's been a downgrade in growth, every time there's been a Eurozone crisis, Ed Ball says you're being reckless, you're cutting too far too fast. And that seemed to be quite powerful. There's the Ed Miliband thing, though, which is this is all very unfair. And that sounded quite limp for the past couple of years. But as we move to a period in which actually the prospects for the UK economy, while they don't improve very much, they don't get much worse, the Ed Ball's critique starts to lose its power because we can no longer keep going, oh, look, here's another growth downgrade. They don't come along anymore. This was the first budget in ages that we actually haven't had a growth downgrade from the Office for Budget Responsibility. So then it becomes much more about, well, where are your priorities? You know, who do you actually support? Are you fair or not? And I think this is where you've got to hear a lot more from Ed Miliband and Ed Ball to get on side of Ed Miliband too and start thinking a lot more about fairness and restructuring capitalism and all this sort of seminar speak that you do get from Ed Miliband and the leaders office. They need to flesh out and turn into proper messages. And I think there's a real danger for Labour unless they cotton on to this opportunity and actually make something of it.
Because, Polly, they're not doing terribly well in the opinion polls at the moment.
No, dismally, particularly on the economy. There was a Comres poll last week that said only 15% of people said they would trust, Labour support as well, that would trust Labour with the economy. So they've got a long way to catch up. But I think they may be about to fall into a serious trap. If the headline news, we know from our own poll, that public opinion is strongly in favour of the 50p rate. So if the headline news is the cut in the 50p rate, Labour's got to say it would put it back. And they're going to fudge this. They're going to say, well, we've got to wait for our budget and we're not sure. Actually, on the fairness grounds, they can say this isn't a matter of budget. This is a matter of fairness. And it's what Ed Miliband always said in his pitch to be leader. And I think they've really got to repair that quickly, because every time they complain about it, the others say, what would you do? And they'll go, well, I'm not sure what we're going to do.
So he's increased cigarettes, he's decreased most other things, but he's frozen drinks so people can at least drown their sorrows. My thanks to Aditya Chakraborty, to Polly Toynbee, to Philip Inman. The producer was Philip Maynard. I'm Tom Clark, and thanks for listening.
The Guardian has partnered with audible.co.uk to offer listeners a free audiobook when you sign up for a 1 month, no commitment trial of the Audible service. Audible has over 50,000 audiobook titles available to download. Go to guardian.co.uk/audible for further details.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.